A Somewhat Improbable Story by G.K. Chesterton. I cannot remember whether this tale is true or not. If I read it through very carefully, I have a suspicion that I should come to the conclusion that it is not. But unfortunately, I cannot read it through very carefully because, you see, it is not written yet. The image and the idea of it clung to me through a great part of my boyhood. I may have dreamt it before I could talk, or told it to myself before I could read, or read it before I could remember. On the whole, however, I am certain that I did not read it, for children have very clear memories about things like that. And of the books which I was really fond, I can still remember not only the shape and bulk and binding, but even the position of the printed words on many of the pages. On the whole, I incline to the opinion that it happened to me before I was born. At any rate, let us tell the story now with all the advantages of the atmosphere that has clung to it. You may suppose me, for the sake of argument, sitting at lunch in one of those quick lunch restaurants in the city where men take their food so fast that it has none of the quality of food, and take their half hour's vacation so fast that it has none of the qualities of leisure. To hurry through one's leisure is the most unbusinesslike of actions. They all wore tall, shiny hats, as if they could not lose an instant even to hang them on a peg, and they all had one eye a little off, hypnotized by the huge eye of the clock. In short, they were the slaves of the modern bondage. You could hear their fetters clanking. Each was, in fact, bound by a chain, the heaviest chain ever tied to a man. It is called a watch chain. Now, among these, there entered and sat down opposite to me a man who almost immediately opened an uninterrupted monologue. He was like all the other men in dress, yet he was startlingly opposite to them in all manner. He wore a high, shiny hat and a long frock coat, but he wore them as such solemn things were meant to be worn. He wore the silk hat as if it were a mitre, and the frock coat as if it were the ephod of a high priest. He not only hung his hat on the peg, but he seemed, such was his stateliness, almost to ask permission of the hat for doing so, and to apologise to the peg for making use of it. When he had sat down on a wooden chair with the air of one considering its feelings, and given a sort of slight stoop or bow to the wooden table itself, as if it were an altar, I could not help some comment springing to my lips. For the man was a big, sanguine-faced, prosperous-looking man, and yet he treated everything with a care that almost amounted to nervousness. For the sake of saying something to express my interest, I said, "This furniture is fairly solid, but of course people do treat it much too carelessly." As I looked up doubtfully, my eye caught his, and was fixed, as his was fixed, in an apocalyptic stare. I had thought him ordinary as he entered, save for his strange, cautious manner. But if the other people had seen him then, they would have screamed and emptied the room. They did not see him, and they went on making a clatter with their forks and a murmur with their conversation. But the man's face was the face of a maniac. "Did you mean anything particular by that remark?" he asked at last, and the blood crawled back slowly into his face.
Nothing whatever," I answered. "One does not mean anything here. It spoils people's digestions."
He limped back and wiped his broad forehead with a big handkerchief, and yet there seemed to be a sort of regret in his relief.
"I thought, perhaps," he said in a low voice, "that another of them had gone wrong."
"If you mean another digestion gone wrong," I said,
"I never heard of one here that went right. This is the heart of the empire, and the other organs are in an equally bad way." "No, I mean another street gone wrong," and he said heavily and quietly, "but as I suppose that doesn't explain much to you, I think I shall have to tell you the story. I do so with all the less responsibility, because I know you won't believe it. For 40 years of my life, I invariably left my office, which is in Leadenhall Street, at 5:30 in the afternoon, taking with me an umbrella in the right hand and a bag in the left hand. For 40 years, 2 months, and 4 days, I passed out of the side office door, walked down the street on the left-hand side, took the first turning to the left and the third to the right, from where I bought an evening paper, followed the road on the right-hand side round 2 obtuse angles, and came out just outside a metropolitan